Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
There's a friend of mine who I've been pestering to write for John Cass News. He's a smart, wickedly funny, and he's just written a piece for John Cass News, There Are No Victims of the System, by Dan Proft. Yes, that Dan Proft, the Dan Proft of the Chicago Morning Answer with Amy Jacobson, the Dan Proft of the Counterculture Podcast for American Greatness, the Dan Proft as a future soccer fan, and the Dan Proft writing Sentimental Barbarism, or The Dangers of the Sentimental Barbarian, by Dan Proft. Can you see that? I can. I can see it. He's our guest today on the Chicago Way Podcast. Joining me, as always, is Jeff Carlin, WGN producer, friend of cats, baker of pies, future physics teacher, and me, John Cass, editor-in-chief of John Cass News. And where are you, as progressives in the leafy and oh-so-precious suburb of Oak Park, famous for its "hate has no home here" signs, begins to kick out migrants? Just like Martha's Vineyard, Barack. Yeah, just like it. You're on the Chicago Way Podcast with Jeff Carlin, John Cass, and Dan Proft.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall-style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
A while back, I began pestering a friend of mine, pestering and pestering him to write a column for John Cass News, and he did. There Are No Victims of the System, by Dan Proft, published on December 13th, 2023. It argues that there are no victims because all those who would cry victimhood are those who enabled the system over years and years and decades, allowing the likes of the Cook County machine to squeeze the homes from people until they have nothing. And he has no sympathy because it has been beaten out of him. And now he's here on the Chicago Way Podcast, Dan Proft.
John, good to be with you. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me the JohnCassNews.com platform. I'm glad you stuck with me until inspiration finally struck.
You had plenty of inspiration many, many times, but yeah. This time you chose to do it. Why did you? What caused you to go there?
Well, I'm trying to get more disciplined about my writing, and now that I have my own podcast that I'm doing with American Greatness called Counterculture, shameless plug number one.
Ding.
But the other thing was, I mean, it's just like years of built up frustration as somebody who has been beating this drum about the confiscatory property taxation in Illinois for literally two decades and spending millions of dollars in campaign funds when I was running a super PAC in Illinois on this issue, and devoting a lot of resources within this newspaper group I'm part of, this local newspaper group I'm part of, to this issue, telling stories, trying to drive it home to people so they're not shocked when they go to sell their home and realize that it's worth a fraction of what they thought it was going to be worth because the property taxation and the negative multiplier that attaches has destroyed the home equity over the years. And or you pay for, I mean, if, and this is also sort of unseen by some, you pay for your house. Most people over 30-year fixed pay for their house 1.5 to 2 times. Well, you pay for your house another full time in Illinois. And then I saw this piece on ABC7 about the group that's being hit in Cook County with this year's triennial assessment, right? Cook County is broken up into thirds, and every third gets a reassessment of their property every third year. So this time it was the South Suburbs, and listening to people in this ABC7 piece that were despondent over the reassessments of their properties, where the reassessment had their property going up 200, 210%. And they knew what was going to happen next year when that translated into the property tax increase, the same thing that happened in West Central Cook County this year in places like Schiller Park and Des Plaines, where residents saw 30% increases in their property taxes. And they're crying about this. And you know, I don't mean to be heartless about it, but they're you know, flummoxed as to what to do. We're not going to be able to stay in our home. We're going to have to move to Indiana. We can't afford to be here. And you know, after a lifetime of work, many were older people. But I'm just like, you know, it's like, how many times do you have to be told the flood is coming before you prepare for the flood? And so that was really the impetus to write the piece, to say, look, over the last 30 years, at least, really over the last 50 since the 1970 Illinois Constitutional Convention, but certainly over the last 30, you knew or you should have known. You were a participant in the way that Madigan and Burke were as predators. You were trying to get in on the scams for your own benefit, or you were sort of passively enabling the scams through your vote. Or you weren't doing enough, if you did recognize it, to expose the scams and motivate people to think differently and vote differently. And so there's no victims, myself included. I'm not a victim of what happened. And that's what I say. You know, I at least I could say I tried to explain what was coming, what was going to happen, what the math meant for all mm-hmm. residents of Chicagoland, the Chicagoland area. But I just don't have any sympathy for them at this stage.
Well, Dan, as an opening salvo for writing something, it's fantastic. I think every person who lives in this state should read it, because I know you think everyone's you know, willfully ignorant at best, or just, you know, playing patsy that for their own benefit. I know great if seemingly better schools or whatever it is that when you look at it, aren't really better, or whatever the idea is, where their money is being taken through property taxes and used to pay for salaries and all this nonsense that the state doesn't need. Where do you think someone comes to this, or like, how do you think we should get this to people? Because do you really think everybody's just playing along, or really that just ignorant? I mean, I feel like people don't understand, really. They just play the game, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess there's some people that just have like a complete inability to reason or to process information, but I don't think that's most people. I think there's commitment to believing the beautiful lies as a coping mechanism for a lot of people. They don't want to know. They don't want to think about it. They just want to take their punishment and try to convince themselves that this is the best of all possible worlds, or this is their lot until they can find a way out. Maybe they've given up and they just think, hey, look, as bad as it is, it could get worse, so we better just stick with the same clan.
Yeah.
The only sort of out I will give them is that they really haven't had great choices. They still could have made the better choice or the worst choice, but they haven't had great choices because the Republican Party has not been an opposition party for most of the last 30 years, certainly the last 20.
Yeah.
So that's a problem too. But, you know, but I mean, when you look at your property tax bill, even if you're paying it out of escrow, I mean, you see where the money goes. And in the suburbs, it's, you know, 75 to 90% is the schools. I mean, in the city, it's still half. So, you know, you look at that and you say, well, I see the aggregate number that continues to go up. I see that the biggest percentage is K-12 schools. And yet I have no questions about the K-12 schools. how they're operating, the salaries and benefits they're conferring, or what they're producing. And I just find that an indefensible posture.
I mean, you lay it out. It's brilliant. We need more of it. So, Dan, keep writing. It's really good.
Yeah, I've got a list of, coming up with a list of things, but I've noticed that as you begun your new career or half career as the host of your new podcast, Counterculture, which
Ding.
I recommend it highly to anyone who cares. You know, I put it on the same level, excuse me, and I know he hits the praise to the face is an open disgrace for Dan Proft, and I understand, but I compare it to Victor Davis Hanson. I mean, I do, and that level of seriousness and scholarship. And I noticed that as you began doing your own commentary and honing it down, then you were ready to write for John Cass Nukes.
Well, you know, I mean, John, you know this better than anybody. I mean, just all the years that you've been writing and the schedule that you've been on and what it takes to put together something that's, you know, thoughtful and concise and hopefully provoking in a positive way. It's a discipline and it's a muscle, and you've got to work at it like anything else. I don't know, for you and the greats like Royko, it came easy. But for me, you know, if there's not that discipline, there's not really working at it, there's not putting, you know, sort of putting all my thoughts into a column that needs to be 800 words or something in that area, and I write 1500 and then I walk away for an hour or two and come back and really think what is essential and what is not, and could this turn of a phrase be sharper, and so on and so forth. So, you know, it's work. It doesn't just necessarily flow for me, even though I can do it somewhat fast, but I think for a lot of really good writers, it's, and I'm not putting myself in that category, but I'm just saying, I think it's work, and I think people don't appreciate how much thought and measuring twice and cutting once goes into it.
Well, I did, just so you know, a little behind the scenes with Dan and I, he sent me a text or something in the middle of this process saying, it's halfway done or it's mostly done. I have to step away and walk away from it, and I'll get back to it. And I thought, wow, that's exactly what I do. You know, you step away, you walk away because you want that first rush of success, that flush that you feel, to dissipate. And you want it cold. You don't want to be emotional when you're honing. You know, you're taking like wood and you're carving a statue, and you want it to be not emotional then when you're cutting. And he did a great job, Dan. It was just superb, because you explained, I mean, outside of the technical ability, you explained something that people need to know.
Yeah.
And I find that we've kind of been ideologically aligned for many years, but I think of all the failures that I had trying to explain to people what they were doing. I remember flirting with the idea that Jim Edgar may have been clean and may have been legit,
right,
putting him on a white horse. And now, thinking back on that and how many people were ruined because of it, it's embarrassing.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, part of it, I mean, I obviously look back on it too. And you were on the column side and I was on the political hack side and running campaigns and messaging and that sort of thing. And
we had we had Jeff Carlin in between us. Yeah.
Yes. the mediating institution that is Jeff. Right. So I think about the same thing about what could have been communicated more clearly, or what is something that would have been more powerful than the choice that I made in terms of content to communicate. But, I don't know. I mean, in my piece, I just wanted to remind people sort of where this started in Cook County.
Exactly.
It started, right, because it's the perfect backdrop with Burke and Madigan now facing federal prison. Burke's trial coming to an end by, well, it was when it has now ended, when the piece was published, it was coming to an end, closing arguments, and then Madigan scheduled to go. And these were the two guys. These were the personifications of the system that was set up after the Constitutional Convention in 1970. And just to make it, you know, crystal clear, Madigan, you know, does the work of the Chicago Democrats, Richard Jay, at the 70 convention. And 2 years later, he opens up Madigan, Getz & Danner, his property tax appeals firm. I mean, you don't think he knew what he set up?
How are you doing?
You know, and then a decade later, when Burke rises to be the chairman of the city's finance committee, then all of a sudden, Clafter and Burke, where he's a partner, his law firm, they open up this robust property tax appeals aspect of their firm, business within the business. And between the two of them, they're representing the biggest property taxpayers, commercial property taxpayers in Cook County over the ensuing 40 years, and then the high net worth individuals, and anywhere where you take a third of a big savings, and that's real money. And so the millions and millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions, I don't know, that they've amassed. And it just went on and on and on. And it's an indictment of the electorate. It's an indictment of the Chicago political press corps. It's an indictment of all the phony goo-goo groups like the BGAs and the civic feds and the city clubs of the world for all these years. It's an indictment of the whole system, the system, as I put in caps,
right.
And everybody within it. And that's pretty much everybody. Nobody gets to escape culpability here.
There was an understanding from the old machine, the old Democratic machine of Richard J. Daley that, yeah, they could, I guess they could squeeze your mortgages and squeeze money. But they had to produce some benefits. Okay. One of those benefits was some sense of order, that you could actually go from your house to your garage to your home and not be clubbed over the head and robbed. Okay, for example, or raped as you went on the CTA on the way to work. But all that's changed now. I look at this morning as we speak on December 17th. I'm looking at the news in CWB Chicago, which I find to be indispensable. And maybe Dan will explain to us why the newspapers don't carry this, but one of the reasons why the newspapers don't carry this kind of story is that they won't run, because it's racist to run mugshots. Anyway, they have a story saying, man carjacked couple at gunpoint while on electronic monitoring for two robberies. So even though they're taking our houses, they're taking their money, they're slapping them in the face saying, take it, shut up and take it, shut up and take it. Then they're unleashing thuggery and barbarians upon the people at the same time, aren't they? And they're also killing off what remains of competitive public schools.
Right. Well, I mean, this is the transition from the machine to the Marxists that started, you know, towards the end of Rahm's tenure, and now is in full blossom. And it's in full blossom at the state level, too. Obviously, the Safety Act is the Pritzker-Perge law. That's a statewide law. That was the General Assembly. And that essentially, you know, socialized the criminal justice system model of Cook County statewide now. So it's not limited to Chicago, as we're starting to see more stories like you just told,
right,
coming to us from the suburbs. And that's going to continue. So, that's right, in terms of you were supposed to provide some benefit, going back to what you said about Richard Jay.
Mm-hmm.
And so the benefit with this system they set up at the 1972 Constitutional Convention was, we were going to have, and Madigan figured this out, we're going to have a patronage army that's indebted to us for life, because it's not just about the job. It's not just being a city worker for 25 years. It's also about the guaranteed net present value seven-figure pension that you get when you retire at 52 or 55. And so that's the genius of what they did. And they just use everybody's home as collateral to finance, right, this otherwise unfinanceable system, particularly as time went on and they you know, engaged in all sorts of additional pension manipulations with sweeteners for this public sector union, that public sector union. And right. And the other trade-off was, well, we'll, in the old man daily was, we'll, you know, shoot to maim, we'll crack skulls, we're going to keep order. Well, then that goes by the wayside too, when you have when we enter the identitarian era, where Marxists use race rather than class as the means to divide and conquer. And the price that they have to pay to their constituents is because it is disproportionately Black men, young Black men, who are in prison for crimes they did commit. Well, that's our constituency. So one of the things we're going to say, consistent with our overall message, is everything is systemically racist, and that includes the criminal justice system. And so we don't distinguish between the law abiding and the law breaking. We don't distinguish between predator and victim anymore, criminal and crime victim. And so for the most part, we are going to soften the touch of the criminal justice system when it comes to our constituency that is predicated on intersectionality. And so this is sort of the next level down in the decivilization of major urban centers and deep blue states. And that's what you see happening in Chicago and Illinois.
It's interesting. I mean, you draw the point there, like the old guard was the daily machine that was, like you said, had this patronage army. But in Chicago, you've seen that patronage army has been taken over by the new guard, the Marxists. And, you know, now they've got their fingers all in that and are sucking up all the value out of that. But they can't get in on the real estate market thing because that's still old guard. So they're pivoting now to like this NGO weird, like, you know, charitable org. We're going to save the world because it's all racists and, you know, fascists out there.
Yeah. Look at what BLM Brandon just rolled out last week with his great new public safety strategy.
Right.
Right. So what is it? It's just, they just give you topic areas. We need to invest where places have been suffered disinvestment. So we're going to invest in just topic areas. We're going to invest in healthcare. We're going to invest in education. We're going to invest in economic development. And by the way, we're also going to have our patronage armies. We call them violence interrupters.
Right.
They're going to be on the streets and on the L platforms. They're reaching out to gangbangers and trying to target neighborhoods that have been particularly afflicted by violent crime. So we're going to pay the violence interrupters, just like the Irish used to pay the storefront preachers to buy the Black vote, or at least enough of it. And so that's the same thing that they're doing. And in conjunction with that, they're going to expand the transfer payments that already exist, the transfer payment program that already exists. They're just going to continue to fund the poverty bureaucracy, just as we've done with the Great Society for the last 60 years at the federal level. That's the play. It's always just to make government bigger
until it runs dry like Detroit.
But how long will it work, Dan? That's the question. I mean, I don't see there's not a lot of room in the runway.
I mean, it's hard to know when pension funds like cops and fire in the city that are less than 25% funded finally capsize, because they're in death spiral, but they are still able to pay current beneficiaries. It's hard to know what kind of further wealth extraction will be done and how institutional wealth will respond to that in the city, and how fast the exodus will continue to impact the city of Chicago.
You have friends that are involved in real estate, and so do I. And commercial real estate, I was just told over dinner at Palermo's Pizza the other night, is dead in Chicago.
That's right. Well, why do you think those big developers in the West Loop are taking the action to set up migrant shelters in their commercial
buildings? Exactly.
Because they can't rent them out, and the city is paying 2 and 3x market rents for their use as migrant shelters. What does that tell you?
Yeah, but it doesn't seem like a long-term investment strategy to make.
But who thinks long-term? I mean, they're thinking, you know, the next, I mean, it's always thinking next election cycle, and you're always in cycle. So, I mean, right. It's, and by the way, it's just an important point on this too. like the idea that it was one thing under Daley and then let's say this century and Rahm and Lightfoot and now it's something different under Brandon Johnson, or it was something different pre-Lightfoot and something different under Lightfoot and Brandon Johnson. It really isn't. They looked at what the Irish did for lo those many years, and they said, well, now we're going to do the same thing, but we just have a different the composition of our constituency is going to be different, and so the quote-unquote policy mix is going to be a little bit different. But it's the same sort of feudalism, neo-feudalism, that was practiced by the Irish. So, I mean, right. I think...
My point wasn't that it's different.
I think people have to understand this is on a continuum. That
right.
The seed of what it has grown in 2023 were planted in 1973.
Well, right, the fountain was open then, and it's just who's got the biggest bucket collecting, the intake on it. Like you said, this new Marxist wave has moved into that position to hold that bucket. And I don't think people realize when you say, what you draw in the piece, which is really great, the idea that, the future of this state is leveraged on the value of everyone's home. And that when they people say, well, the state owes X, Y, and Z in funds, and every individual property owner technically owes this as well. That's technically is reality. People don't realize that the state's value is finite and it's us. And you drew a great point of that. I don't think that's what people can, really see, that they have everything in on this, everything, their value of their home. Many people, like my parents and their siblings, all they have is that. And the state technically has leveraged it already. And it's trying to cut its piece back of it. It's shocking when it's laid out bare like that.
Well, right. And the state, the unfunded obligations the state has can never be made. But what will happen is at some point there will be a financial reckoning and everybody's going to get hurt. It'll be to varying level, but everybody's going to get hurt. You're going to see what you're seeing, frankly, in New York right now because of the spend they've made on migrants. You're going to have all these hallowed agencies or programs, they're going to face cuts and people are going to face tax increases like they haven't seen to date. I mean, it's things that we haven't seen in Chicago that other big cities have implemented long ago, like a city income tax. I mean, those things are not off the table. So the doom loop that Chicago is in is going to continue increasing in speed.
One thing that's different from 72, when Madigan took over and became on his rise to the mountain of power and riches, is that the newspapers were different. There was some semblance of a conservative newspaper in terms of its outview, but the newspapers did try to hold the political class to account somewhat. But I think they capitulated many, many years ago, which left us with no newspapers except the ones you're associated with. Can you tell us more about them?
Well, it's a really interesting parallel because it's sort of the same thing that happened to the city and the state. I mean, you all the institutions sort of track the same path in terms of their demise, right? I mean, people forget. Look, Republicans had control of the state Senate for the entirety of the 90s with Pate Phillip. There were some real conservatives in the caucuses back in as early as the or as late as recently as the 90s and into the first part of this century, and now that's all gone away. But it's just like the same thing where you went from old man Daley all the way to present. It's a slow chipping away. It's a slow chipping away by kleptocrats, whether they wear the machine uniform or the Marxist uniform or the Rhino uniform. It's the slow chipping away, and you've seen that happen in the opposition party. You've seen that happen in the press corps. And so the papers that I'm affiliated with just do, I'm sort of passively involved. I'm not a writer, and I don't do that much day to day. It's more sort of blue sky stuff. But they're just intended to fill the void that's been left by the demise of the major dailies and their suburban weeklies. and is provide community news. I mean, pictures and proper nouns talk about communities and what's going on in Hinsdale, if you live in Hinsdale, and Westmont, if you live in Westmont, and Chicago Heights, if you live in Chicago Heights, rather than, you know, what the Tribune had been doing, which is doing, you know, Sunday spreads, a three-part series on what's happening in South, sub-Saharan Africa, but they don't know what's
right.
happening in South suburbs. They're not, they're not talking about property taxes, and they're not talking about public safety and so forth. So that's
what you have to
do, and then also do what you sort of you do and had always have done, which is provide a check on the local political leaders. I mean, newsify data, provide information, provide context and consequence to what's happening in your community and vis-a-vis your region in a way that the big dailies and the network affiliate newscasts stopped doing a long time ago.
You know, besides Dan and I, and our abiding, we have many things in common, like our abiding love for the beautiful game of soccer, for example. But on top of that.
And cycling.
And cycling. We also have held in common by the animosity most journalists have for us. I mean, they really hate me and they hate Dan. And they go out of their way to dig to stab you in the ribs whenever they can. I'm amazed by this hatred.
It's gratuitous. I mean, just as it is with you, because they're opponents of independent thought. They're, if you're not a member of the guild, then you're not an enlightened, a civic-minded thinker.
The guild who is protesting in front of the old Tribune Tower.
Yeah.
For some reason this week.
Letters to the readers, please save
right.
it. These are intolerant, hateful people, just like their suburban and urban readership, small as it is. But I mean, think of the offals at the Starbucks in Wilmette. And that's basically the profile of whatever constitutes these propagandists at these pamphlets they call daily newspapers in Chicago. They're political activists. They're not journalists.
Well, one thing we've noticed, I have yet to see them condemn Brandon Johnson for destroying competitive schools. And these are schools that were built to serve minority students, black and brown students, and they've been wiped from the face of the map.
I mean, right. So this is so predictable. I mean, they killed the tax credit scholarship program,
right?
With 30,000 kids and another 30 on the waiting and the waiting lists, as it were, looking for more resources. And of course, 11 selective enrollment high schools out of 168 high schools in Chicago. Well, that's 11 too many for the teachers union. So you knew they were going to come for them, which they did. And so now what you'll see, which is a hard thing to pull off, but it's going to happen. The schools will actually get worse yet. The neighborhood schools will worsen through the lack of competition. And a lot more Chicagoans with means will leave the city because they're not, if you can leave the city so that you don't have to send your kid to the local neighborhood school for the most part, then you're going to. So it's just, it's what I think Carlin said earlier. I mean, it's the race to emulate Detroit. And they're pressing the pedal down. Wait till I write my takedown of soccer.
Yes.
I think that would be too easy for you, but I don't mind you. If a writer wants to curl up into a little fetal ball of rage, that's okay with me. I do want, though, if you please take down the Chicago Fire, because as I'm like a Democrat complaining about my property taxes with the Chicago Fire.
Yeah,
but at the same time, I if you want to do that, that's fine. But I would really like Dan Prof to write the end all be all column on, and here's the title: The Sentimental Barbarian.
Well, Dan, that is a good topic area.
Yeah,
I don't think people. Like sentimentality is associated with like a Lifetime movie or something like this. And it has, I think, a positive connotation in most people's mind, but in a political or philosophical context. Philosophical, probably a better description.
Well, how does it bring us closer to the gas chamber, for example?
Well, right. I mean, that's the Flannery O'Connor reference. It's feeling your way through life rather than thinking.
And that's what we're doing now.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the United States, we're doing that. As even, you know, we're even doing that when we reach for the tomahawks to club our enemies to death. We're doing it with feeling rather than reason.
Well, that's what identitarianism is. And I go back to this interview that Thomas Sowell did with Peter Robinson on the occasion of his new book just a month and a half ago. And Peter Robinson over at the Hoover Institution asked him a very simple question. He said, if the identitarians get everything they wanted in terms of their policy agenda, what would be happening right now in America? And Thomas Sowell said, we would be killing each other. And that is happening in America, but he means, of course, on an even grander scale than we are. And that's the reality of it, because the sentimentality is of the so-called sophisticates is unbounded from any principle. There's no limiting principle to it when you live your life through feeling, and also have complete hubris that if I'm feeling it, it must be the right feeling because I'm a good person. And so let's go with my feeling. And you're right. I mean, that requires putting a little bit more meat to those bones in terms of examples, I think, to animate
but
it. But that's the gist.
They're
of it.
There, though. Look, I mean, the Black Lives Matter movement, like look at the violence that came out of that. Look at this recently, you know, the way they were able to turn these idiots and these college campuses into this raging mob that's terrorizing Jewish business owners just because they're Jewish, you know, that's just test case right there. Right. I mean, they just have to start coming for any landowner or a property owner or anybody who refuses to pay whatever it is. And I think you know, we've seen this, what's possible, and to see what could be possible is terrifying.
Well, you see how that's a good example. You see how mindless it is,
right?
And it's all forced through the oppressor versus oppressed construct and generations on campus that matriculated at these quote unquote elite institutions and then became part of the professorate or administrative staff there over the last 30 years since the spawn of the BDS movement. So they've been taught this. They have no idea. They don't even, you see interviews, they don't even know when they're chanting from the river to the sea, they don't even know what river they're talking about. They have no knowledge of that region, its history. They have no knowledge of the Jewish people. They have, frankly, no knowledge even of the atrocities of Hamas and the stated belief systems that are part of that Hamas terrorist organization and other.
They don't even know what Jews are. They just hate whites. Okay, it's a white hatred thing.
But where does that lead you? It leads you to saying out loud things like we heard outside of the Sydney Opera House, "Gas the Jews." People literally chanting that. I don't care if it's 10 or if it's 10,000. The idea that anyone who is a part of Western civilization would be chanting that phrase should be shocking to people, and it should speak to that what Flannery O'Connor meant when she said sentimentality ultimately leads to the gas chamber. That's exactly what she's talking about. The barbarism that was unleashed in the wake of the death of George Floyd, right. and how it's manipulated by institutions that are supposed to be mediating, they're supposed to provide the foundation of civilization, but instead what they do is stoke the mob through sentimentality in whatever direction they want the mob to go in furtherance of their pursuit of political power.
Yeah. Look at Ferguson.
Ferguson, another example. Yeah, right. I mean, the underlying facts don't matter.
Right.
I mean, you had Claudine Gay, who, you know, couldn't bring her, the president of Harvard, can't bring herself to denounce Harvard students calling for the genocide of the Jews, but she could bring herself to denounce on cue over the last several years, she denounced the death of Adam Toledo in Chicago, and the officer was not charged with any crime, nor should he have been, because the kid had a gun, and people remember that case. But Claudine Gay doesn't care. Dante Wright in Minnesota. Well, Dante Wright was accidentally killed by a Minnesota police officer who thought she was reaching for her taser. She was reaching for her gun. She shot and killed him, thinking it was a taser. And that was negligent homicide. And she was prosecuted, yeah, and serving jail time. But there was nothing racial about that. He was resisting arrest, and she made a terrible mistake in the moment, and she paid for it.
Yeah.
But Claudine Gay doesn't care about that, because it's about using emotion to stoke barbarism.
I think of the severed head of some woman of French nobility being held up for her family to see during the revolution in France. And I find all these things that you're talking about describing, the reliance on emotion, the incredible ignorance, the barbaric ignorance and misunderstanding, and all of this wrapped up together to lead us to where we are today. It's almost like we're in a revolutionary period.
I think it's a fair assessment.
I don't know, and there's no way out of it right
now. Well, I think we are in a revolutionary period, but it's more like the French Revolution than the American Revolution.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And I mean, you know, the great historical examples of these nobles, you know, whatever our modern day nobles look like, I guess they look like J.B. Pritzker. You know, you finance these neo-Jacobins, and you wind up being surprised, and those around you get surprised when they come for you, like they did for the Duke of Orleans during the French Revolution, Louis Philippe. I mean,
I can imagine JB saying no, no, like trying to hold his fleshy little paws out to stop the mob. No,
this is going to boomerang around on them in a way that are going to be a lot less sort of mildly entertaining than Oak Park kicking out the migrants. I mean, that's an example. It's a relatively innocuous example of the boomeranging, but it's going to get worse from here if you don't put down this this identitarian neo-Jacobin revolution that's occurring.
And that's why being an editor is such a great thing. I can prompt and poke at a friend of mine to get them to think in terms that I would like them to think in, and challenge themselves. And Dan Proft is nothing if not a man of who challenges himself all the time. Dan Proft, thanks for being here on the Chicago Way podcast.
John and Jeff, always a pleasure, gentlemen. Thank you.
For Dan Proft, podcast host of the Counterculture Podcast and the Morning Answer radio show with Amy Jacobson on Salem, and for Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, producer of Dan Proft, and producer of John Cass when we were radio hosts at WLS.
Jeff Carlin made us.
He made us. He held us in his hands as we were puddles of goo, like, yeah, I can't stand this. I don't want to work here.
I turn the lights on.
Turn the lights on. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, Greek Orthodox Christian, editor-in-chief of John Cass News, and where you can find merch like the John Cass hat, No Trumbolone hat, and the John Cass Jeff Carlin coffee cup. And any suggestions are more than welcome on more merch, more merch, more merch. Welcome, and have a great Christmas holiday, everyone. Love you all, and see you soon. Bye.